Well, howdy. Okay, good. All right. My name is Todd Berkey. I'm one of the pastors here at Grace. I typically work with our young adult ministry called Junction, and it's just an honor to be here at Southwood. It truly is. It's an honor and it's a privilege every time that I get to be here. I am reminded of in the portico area when you come in, that's where I had my first look with my bride, where I was looking out towards the parking lot and the photographer said, okay, you can turn around. And so I turned around and there was this just beautiful bride who was mine and the doors opening up and down she came, you know, and we got wedded right here on stage. Like it's just awesome moments. And as a fellow, I would come here and there'd be fellows classes. And it's just, Southwood has a special place in my heart. And it's really an honor and it is a privilege to be here with y'all this morning. I've been praying for our time together. I was praying yesterday on a jog, as I was jogging past here, I was praying, and I say jog because words matter, okay? I'm a competitive person, and there's been a change that's happened in my life. I used to be a runner. I am now a jogger, okay? And so you may be like, aren't they the same? You're both like moving. They're not. They're very, very, very different. So for example, I was a competitive athlete all throughout school and into college. And so we would go for a run. And depending on how far the run was, that determined how fast we needed to go. So if you're running a mile, you had to have 5:15 or less. If you were running up to 3 miles, you had a 6:30 pace or less. If you were 5 to 13 miles, it was 7 minutes, 30 second mile pace or less. If you were going over 13 miles, it needed to be 8 minutes, 30 second mile pace or less. And so I was a runner. That is what a runner does. And so every time I'm like distance and determination, like that's just it. Runners do that. Joggers, on the other hand, joggers are like, it's about getting the blood flowing. You know, it's just about kind of, it's the journey, really. Maybe you go a mile, maybe you go two, I don't know. You know, you'll wave to people as you go by, you slow down. And so I was a runner for so long, but what I realized were two things. Number one is that nobody cared how fast I was going. Literally, nobody cared. Except for maybe me, but there wasn't the Olympic trial team wasn't coming behind me saying, man, we really see potential in you. Like, no, nobody cared about that. The other thing that I realized is as I grew chronologically, as I got older, running at that pace and trying to hurt my joints, hurt my muscles. And so I was like, this is just not great. And so it was about a year ago, I went ahead and said, I am going to become a new creation and become a jogger. So now I go on jogs. I don't go on runs. But it's interesting. I have obstacles. Even though I know this is new me, the jogger whose purpose is to just get the blood flowing and go slowly and wave to people. Like I understand that's my purpose. I have these obstacles that makes me want to go back to the old self. One of them is an internal voice. So I put my jogging shoes on, and even as I'm doing that, these are running shoes. I'm like, no, these are jogging shoes. No, they're running shoes. And I come out to my driveway and I start to jog. But inside, there's this voice that says, "What are you doing? Let's go 5:15, 5:15, let's go. You gotta go. If you don't go that pace, you're slow. Who are you? You're nobody. Get going." And so I have these old habits that are sitting there just calling out to me saying, don't be a jogger, be a runner. Well, a couple weeks ago, I got up and I started to jog and that voice was going on. I'm like, no, I'm gonna jog. I get to my friend of my neighborhood. My next obstacle that I almost always face are runners. Live in a college town, there's a bunch of runners around. And so I know when I see a runner, something triggers inside of me. It's, I will beat you. Like, I'm just a competitive person. And so when I get to the front of my neighborhood, I look left and I look right. And if I see somebody jogging, I go the opposite direction. Because if I go the same direction as you, I'm going to have to be like, I will outpace you. I'm going to discourage you. I'm going to dominate you. If you've passed me, I have to catch you. I don't know what it is, but that's an obstacle that I have to overcome. And so a couple weeks ago, overcame obstacle number one. Internal voice. Obstacle number two, there was a guy and he was running and I felt it well up, like return, forget your purpose, go to this. I ignored it and I'm thinking, I'm enjoying jogging. And then right around the corner here from school, all of a sudden something strikes me in my arm. I'm like, what is that? And I look and it's a bird who's attacking me. Well, I wasn't really prepared for that obstacle. And it's the second time this has happened that I've been on a jog and been attacked by a bird. And so I did what any good person would do. I forgot the purpose of the jog. I turned into a sprinter. I ran as fast and as hard and as long as I possibly could, which was really slow, not that far. But the result of that, of being moved off my purpose from this bird that was attacking me, As the day went on, my legs began to ache. My joints began to hurt. The next day, I was very stiff walking around because I had forgotten my purpose. I had drifted from being a jogger, and I had returned to this old way of doing things. Why am I telling you this? Watch out for birds when you run. That's it. Now, I'm telling you this because the same is true for you and I. We are created and designed with a purpose. And when we forget that purpose and run some other way, we find ourselves tired, exhausted, hurt, and maybe never wanting to continue that route. I didn't want to go for another jog because my legs were really, really sore, wanting just to give up. And so this morning with Proverbs, I want us to, before we start off with things, I want us just to remind us of our purpose. Why are we here? What is the meaning of life, if you will? And I would boil it down to, in very simplistic ways, it's to image God. Our purpose in life is to image God. Genesis chapter 1, 27, it tells us this, right? It tells us that God created humankind in his own image, and the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. We are created to image God. If he acts one way, we are to image that in the world that we live in. We see that Jesus did this. If you want to have fun sometime, enjoy the book of John and see how many times Jesus referenced things like this. He does so in John 5:19. He says, "Truly, truly, I tell you, the Son of Man can do nothing of himself unless it's something he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, these things the Son does also in the same way." You would see it also in 5:30, in 6:38, 8:26, 8:28, 12:49, and more. It would go on and on and on that Jesus is saying, everything that I do is imaging God, so much so that he'd be called the exact representation, the very image of God. So we have this purpose to image God, and you're like, okay, well, what does this have to do with Proverbs? Well, Proverbs, we've been in the series all summer long. It's about skillful living. You've probably heard that. Skillful living, they're principles, they're not promises. You've probably also heard that Proverbs is just the best way to do life. It's like these are just practical ways to go about doing life that work best. And I think those things are all true, but when I'm also thinking through of our purpose to image God, and I think of Proverbs being a very practical way to live, I look at Proverbs and I say, man, Proverbs, they're invitations to live practically in step with our design. And so when we get to go through and there's been messages, whether it's been on friendships, who do we choose and how do we approach friendship, or how do we deal with generosity or with money or with work? Like when we begin to look at these different practical areas, these are all wonderful things for us to go like, hey, these are spheres where we can image God. The cool thing with imaging God too, just really, really quick, is we can always be worshiping. We don't have to wait to come on a Sunday morning to come here, sing songs to worship. We can image God everywhere, at work, at home, with friends, alone, at the gym, while we're driving, all those places. There's never a situation where we can't live on purpose. We can always image him. And that gives me hope, freedom, and gets me just excited to live. If you can't tell, I'm kind of excited by this. So this morning, our topic, though, what we're going to be talking about is justice. And this is a huge topic, and so we're going to have to paint with really broad strokes as we come through. And so our hope is we're going to look at different elements and come up with a working definition, a broad working definition of justice. And Proverbs mentions justice all over the place. Just a few examples. In Proverbs 8:20, for example, wisdom is speaking, and wisdom says, I walk in the way of righteousness, in the midst of the paths of justice. In 17:23, a wicked person accepts a bribe from inside the pocket to pervert the ways of justice. 21:15, the exercise of justice is joy for the righteous. And then in 29:4, it's really interesting because Proverbs, it's a father talking with a son. It's a king talking to the next king. And he says this, he says, son, the king gives stability to the land by justice. So it's mentioned several times throughout Proverbs. We're going to look at it. Again, the idea is to look at a few elements to have a working definition of justice that then we can apply in a multitude of areas in our lives. So we will make three stops. What is justice? Who is impacted by justice? And what does it practically look like? All of those are going to be elements for us to come up with a very broad definition. But let us go ahead and read again our text in Proverbs 21, 1 through 4. The king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of God. He turns it wherever he pleases. Every person's way is right in his own eyes, but the Lord examines the hearts. To do righteousness and justice is preferred by the Lord more than sacrifice. Haughty eyes and a proud heart. The lamp of the wicked is sin. There's a word that was there three times over. You might have caught it. I should have emphasized it more, but the word heart was mentioned. In Hebrew, when it's talking about the heart, it's talking about the source of action, the why, our motives, our thoughts, like what is causing us to do things. And so when we think about justice, when we start building up this definition of justice, we have to have one element in mind. We have to know that justice, it includes an attitude. It's not just something that's out here, but there's actually something in here that needs to change in order for us to be men and women who can do justice. In 21:1, it talks about the king's heart, right? In the ancient Near East, the king is the ruler over all. Nobody tells the king what to do. The king is top dog, and yet the most powerful one has one stronger and better and more mighty at work. Where? In the king's heart. And yet that big, strong God doesn't just say, I'm only working in the king's heart. That same God says, I'm working in all people's hearts. Every person's way is right in his own eyes, but the Lord examines the heart. He's always been about the heart. It's not a new thing. Solomon is talking with his son, probably Rehoboam, with a lot of these things. But if you back up, Solomon's dad was David. And when David was being anointed as king, there was a prophet named Samuel who God said, go to Jesse's house and you're going to anoint the new king because I need a king who's going to be a man after God's own heart, because the heart matters to the Lord. And so Samuel shows up. Jesse's like, oh, this is awesome. Here's my first son, the oldest. And he's tall and he's strong. He's like, this is the leader of leaders. And Samuel's thinking, certainly this is the one the Lord has brought me here to anoint. And the Lord quiets Samuel and says, hold on, Samuel. It says in 1 Samuel 16:7, it says, Samuel, God does not see as man sees, since man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. It's all, justice has to involve our heart, the reason that we do things, the motives, how we think, how we process. Because if we're left to our own devices, we will always excuse whatever behavior we want. Everything will be right in our own eyes. Every person's way is right in his own eyes, right? We can excuse all sorts of behaviors when our hearts are set on something other than the Lord. Prime example, years ago, I grew up all over the place, but I was living in Michigan at the time. They have cold winters and they have snow, which is awesome. And we were riding the school bus home, and a dialogue started happening among some of the guys on the bus, like, I throw the best snowball. No, man, I throw the best snowball. No, I'm better than you. No, I'm better than you. A snowball, like, who cares, right? Who would get so worked up about that? Competitive Todd would. And so my neighbor John and I, we began to argue, like, I throw a better snowball. No, I throw a better snowball. I'm like, well, fine, we're going to settle this. When the bus doors open up, we're going to get out. We're going to make a snowball. One shot. You get to throw one. I get to throw one. Deal. Game on. School bus stops. Doors open. Out we come. Make our snowball, and we're ready. I'm like, okay, go ahead, John. Go ahead. And so John throws, whew, and it's a pretty good shot. I stand there, hits me in the shoulder. I'm like, wow, that was a pretty good shot. But now it's time for my throw. Yet John does the unthinkable. John turns after throwing and runs. He starts running home. Now, he's admitted defeat. He's admitted, like, I know there's no way that was as good of a throw as what Todd. I know that. And so I told everybody who was watching, everybody, this is John. He's a boy made in the image of God. We're going to let him admit defeat and just run away. Of course, that's what I did. No, we had a deal. I had to prove that I was the best. And so as John was running, I took aim and I threw. And I've never thrown a snowball so great, hitting the back of his head as he runs away, bursting and down his shirt. And in my mind, the crowd is going wild. Todd, you are the best. I'm like, I know. I came home with some swagger. And my mom says, Todd, did you throw a snowball at John? John had stopped by my house to tell on me. And so I'm like, oh man, I know in our house we're supposed to treat people kindly, and hitting him with a snowball probably isn't something to be doing all the time, even when he was in a defenseless manner. Like, oh no. But every person's way is right in our own eyes. And so I was like, well, yeah, I did. Well, why did you do that? Well, because everybody would have called me chicken if I didn't. We had an agreement. If I didn't do what I was supposed to do, they would have called me chicken. My name would have been, you know, defamed. Mom, I would have been looked at as wrong. And so because my name was at stake, I did the honorable thing, which was to hit him in the head with a snowball, Mom. That's why. Mom's like, because they were going to call you chicken. You get that? Oh, from chicken? Like, yeah. I was fine the rest of the day. The point of the story is we will always excuse our behavior if our heart is set upon us. We will always be making decisions, no matter how horrible they may be, and we will write a narrative that that is right and just. And the reality is that justice deals with our attitude, and there's no way that just definition of justice can ignore the heart, ignore our attitude. So that's one element we just need to know. It's going to be a heart, an attitude that's probably not set on ourselves, right? It's going to be on something else, which we'll get to in just a brief moment. But it's not just an attitude, it's an action as well. Justice isn't just like, oh, I feel bad for that. Somebody should do something. It's also a doing, right? To do righteousness and justice is preferred by the Lord more than sacrifice. To do, we actually act. So we think differently and we act differently, all part of this definition of justice. Now, I don't know about you, but this verse really kind of drove me a little batty. To do righteousness and justice. Like, how do you do righteousness and how do you do justice? Like, are they the same or are they not? Because I began to look and see, like, many, many times in the Old Testament, when justice is used, righteousness is right there. Even in Proverbs 1:3, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness and justice and integrity combined. Proverbs 8:20, wisdom again is speaking, I walk in the ways of righteousness and in the midst of the paths of justice. There they are, linked together again. 21:5, the exercise of justice is joy for the righteous. Linked together. So I'm thinking, what's the difference between these two? Because they're not always together. Outside of Proverbs, in Genesis chapter 18, verse 19, God is going to judge Sodom. And as he's walking through, they say, they're passing through Abraham, and they say, should we tell Abraham what we're getting ready to go do? And God's like, absolutely. Abraham is going to be the leader of this nation. Abraham needs to know the things that I value. Listen to what God says. He says, yes, we should tell him, for I have chosen him, Abraham, so that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice. So they're linked together all over the place. And I'm thinking, why does it even matter? We're going to split those words in just a moment, but it matters because of this. If our purpose is to image God, God is righteous and just. And we know that in Psalm 97, verse 1 and 2, it's talking about the Lord's reign. It says this. It says, the Lord reigns, may the earth rejoice, and may the many islands be joyful. Clouds and thick darkness surround him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. So, imaging God, God reigns with righteousness and justice. Solomon telling his son, king, you're to image God by doing righteousness and justice. But these two words, there's overlap and yet there's distinction. It's a little bit like a chai tea latte. I am not a coffee drinker. Anybody here a coffee drinker? Probably one or two of you are. Yes. I'm also like a big people pleaser, and I'm just kind of insecure in general, and so walking into a coffee shop not knowing like what to order is very overwhelming for me. I don't even understand the sizes. How come it can't just be small, medium, large? Like, I don't understand this. And so many years ago, people would always want to meet in coffee shops. Like, I don't even know what to do. I feel so awkward. And somebody turned me on to a chai tea latte. I'm like, I like this. Okay, now I can meet you at a coffee shop. Long time ago in a country far away, get to the coffee shop early and think, okay, I know I can order on my own while I'm waiting. And so the barista says, can I help you? And I'm like, yes, you can. I would like a chai tea latte, please. I'm really confident. Like, I'm doing it. And the barista goes, oh, what have I done? He's like, well, chai is tea and tea is tea. So you just ordered a tea latte. Oh, I was horrified. I'm like, I thought chai was a flavor. I didn't know that it was actually meant tea. He's like, no. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'll have a chai latte, please. He's like, that's great. What flavor? What? Isn't chai a flavor? He's like, oh, yeah, it is. So he's making fun of me because I ordered a tea latte. Turns out, talking to a friend of mine from another country, and they tell me, Todd, in our country, latte also means tea. So really, if you ordered a chai tea latte, you're ordering a tea. And so apparently, I don't know how to order even a chai latte anymore. The point being is those words, chai and tea, there's overlap, and yet there's distinction. There are many different flavors of tea. Chai does mean tea, but it's also a flavor of tea. Righteousness and justice. There is overlap, and yet there's distinction. And I want us to look really quick at that. The word righteous. Its root in Hebrew is straightness. It's the idea of an action that conforms to a norm. So righteousness is an action that conforms to a norm. Well, what's that norm that it's conforming to? We know that that norm is not just our own impulses, right? Proverbs tells us that in Proverbs 16:25, there's a way that seems right to a person, but its end leads to death. So the norm is not ourselves. What is the norm? And we know it's God. It's God's image. So an action that lines up, that looks like and feels like and is, models how God is, any action that's in step with that is a righteous action. We see this in Deuteronomy, here's in 6:25. Moses is writing and he says this, "And it will be righteousness for us if we are careful to follow all this commandment before the Lord our God, just as he commanded." And just unpack really, really quick. God had given them the law, right? And they were supposed to follow the law. That was their standard. But when you look at the law, if they followed it, they were going to look radically different than the nations around them, which they were supposed to. But God doesn't lie, so the people weren't supposed to lie. God is faithful, so the people were to be faithful. God doesn't steal, so the people weren't to steal. And so when they would follow the law, they were imaging God. Their deeds were actually coming, conforming to a standard, which was God himself, and they would look radically different. And he's saying, so it will be righteousness. When you do these things, that is a righteous deed when it's in line with how God is wired. I want to pause for a moment because there can be some confusion here. We're talking about the doing of righteousness. Because you and I, we become righteous only by faith. It's really interesting. The very first use of the word righteous and righteousness is found in Genesis, which we would expect, but it's in Genesis chapter 15, 16. And if you're not familiar with what's going on there, Abraham is talking to God, and God says, "Hey, I've got all these blessings for you." And Abraham basically is like, "Well, I don't have any offspring, so it doesn't matter. It's going to somebody else." And then God says, no, Abraham, you are going to have a son. And Abraham has this promise of God, and what does he do? It says, Abraham believed God. He trusted God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. What does the New Testament say, right? That we become a new creation. Righteousness is given to us. It's never earned. Our position of being righteous is by believing and trusting the work of Jesus Christ, the promise that his sacrifice was enough to bring us back into a right relationship to God, to fix the brokenness that is deep in us. So being righteous is always by faith. It's always through grace. Always by trusting that promise, but doing of righteousness, a righteous action that we do is an action that's in line, in step with a norm, and that norm is God himself. So that's righteousness. Now, justice is if you were to look at this way, righteousness is to live in step with God. Just simplistically, broad stroke. Now, justice is really similar because it has the idea of conformity, but to conform in our judgments and our declarations, all right? So you're like, just bear with me here a little bit. It's how we judge and how what we say, it's conforming to a norm. Again, that norm is going to be God himself. And so righteousness is how we live in step with God. Justice is how we rule in step with God. We see this in Solomon's life himself. Remember, he's getting ready to be king. He knows he's young. He needs wisdom. He prays to the Lord like, "Hey, I need wisdom. These are your people. I can't do this." He's like, "Okay, I give you wisdom." And right away, what happens? Right away, there's a case that's brought before him of two women, two prostitute women who are outcasts in society. They both have kids at the same time. And one rolls over and the other one kills the baby. And then she switches out her dead child for the other woman who's sleeping and the live child. That woman wakes up and goes, "This is not my kid. Give me my kid." She's like, no, your kid's that kid. And so there's this argument. These people who are basically viewed as the least of these, but Solomon hears that case. And as they come before him, that's the argument. And he sits there and thinks, "Well, how am I supposed to know? I mean, there's not DNA test." So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and bring out a sword. We're going to cut the kid in half, and then you get a half of the kid, and you get a half of the kid. And one of the ladies is like, "Sounds good, because that way we can both suffer." And the other lady was like, no, you can have it. You can have the child. And Solomon knows, I got to the truth of the matter. You are the real mom. Give her the living baby. And so Solomon made this incredible ruling. And right after that, what happens? It was recorded this here in 1 Kings chapter 3. It says this: when all Israel heard about that judgment we just talked about, when they heard about that judgment which the king had handed down, they feared the king because they saw that they saw the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice. He is ruling in step with God's image. And so he's setting the tone for his kingdom as this. Decisions are going to reflect God. He's going to find truth. He's going to hear from all people. They all matter. And so he begins to set up a kingdom. Everything that's under his authority, he's going to encourage them to be in step with God. So righteousness, to live in step with God. Broad strokes here, justice, to rule in step with God, as we're looking to build this longer definition. I took us on this journey not so we can go, well, that's great. I'm not a king. I don't have to worry, so justice doesn't apply to me. I took us on the journey so we could begin to see that we all have spheres of influence. We all have areas where we reign. We really do. If we're a parent, we are ruling in a home. Are we setting up an environment, creating an environment where those underneath us are being encouraged to image God? Is the way our house works, is it in step with God himself? We have some people here who own businesses, people who are managers, people who are teachers, people who have friends and they have social influence. We have people who are running and leading a small group. We have spheres of influence all over the place, but are we using that sphere of influence to create an environment that's encouraging others to image God? That is justice, as a part of justice. It's ruling in step with God. I'm going to move quickly about now who is impacted with justice. Well, everybody, right? Everybody is. Because it's a king talking. In the ancient Near East, it's a king who's talking. And so the culture that he's setting up, everybody's impacted with justice. And so he's setting this whole kingdom up that's going to be founded on truth. Meaning this, in Proverbs 16:11, he says, a just balance and scales belong to the Lord. All the weights of the bag are his concern. What he's saying is, you, as a person who's the middleman between the folks who are pulling out the barley and selling the barley, you're the middleman. So these day laborers, when they come in and they say, here is 10 pounds of barley, your weights that you use are accurate. You don't sit there and say, well, it says 10 pounds, but really its weight is only 8, so I'm taking advantage of these people. No, it matters to the Lord. You're paying a fair price here. And when you sell it, you're doing the same. You're not going, well, here's one that says 10 pounds, but it actually, you know, weighs less or more. And so you're sitting here going, you are truth in trade. You're protecting all. But there's also truth in judgment. Right? In Proverbs 17:23, a wicked person accepts a bribe from inside the pocket to pervert the ways of justice. Again, in Proverbs, they make it really easy. The wicked person, bad. The good person, good. A good person is sitting here going, I am here to image God. What he is like, I want to reflect. I'm going to follow the paths of wisdom because wisdom is from God. That's what I'm going to do. So he matters most. His agenda matters most. His timetable matters most. That's the good person. The evil, wicked person over here says, no, I'm the opposite of that. So I matter most. My name matters most. Right now matters most. And so when you're sitting here and you're like, oh my goodness, there's going to be now truth in judgment, that means that a good judge says, we're finding the truth no matter if you can bring a bribe or not. We're going to find truth. And so what does that do? Truth in trade, truth in judgment. It creates this environment of stability, consistency. It impacts everybody. Justice impacts all. And yet, it focuses on the least of these. Coming back to Deuteronomy 24:17, you shall not pervert the justice due a stranger or an orphan, nor seize a widow's garment as a pledge. Justice is impacting all, but it focuses on the least of these. The stranger, part of your community, but they know nobody. The orphan, here they are, they have no family to protect and defend, to stand up for them. The widow is the same, they've lost the family, and so they are very exposed. And what we're going to do is set up a kingdom to do justice. You don't pervert that. They, the least of them, deserve justice, fairness in trade, truth in judgments. That's setting up an environment that has justice ruling. The protection is for all, but it's especially for the defenseless and the helpless. And honestly, this is shocking. It was shocking then, and it's shocking now. We may be used to that, saying, yeah, that sounds great, that doesn't bother, but this is incredibly shocking. It's not just me who says it's shocking, it's confusing in Proverbs here. It says, evil people do not understand justice, but those who seek the Lord understand everything, which is kind of a huge thing, right? Like, if you seek the Lord, you understand everything. Wait, what? Context again, remember, good, God's kingdom, his timetable, his way, I want to be in alignment. Evil, all about me, myself, and I. And so when they, the evil people, who are me, myself, and I, see justice being done, somebody's not taking advantage of the day laborer. They don't understand that. Why would you do that? Because a day laborer could do nothing for me. They're just people to manipulate so my name and my wealth grow. I don't understand. They can't benefit you at all. Why would you help them? Because it's all about me, myself, and I, the unholy Trinity. So justice, when as it unfolds, it's confusing and shocking back then, and it is today too. But see, the righteous understand something that the evil don't. The righteous, those who have their minds set and their hearts set on the Lord, who are looking to image him, they understand that there's something different about humanity. And that every single person who is made in the image of God and has incredible value. It does not matter if they're an orphan. It does not matter if they're a widow or a stranger. It does not matter anything about them because they're simply humanity has incredible value in God's eyes. And so these acts of justice, it's never done out of pity. Justice has nothing to do with, I pity these people. No. Justice is like, I see people who have incredible value, who are fearfully and wonderfully made, for whom Christ died. There is such value there. That value needs to be protected and defended. It's never out of pity. It's always out of this overflow of value. And that's confusing to the evil, but for followers of the Lord who have their hearts transformed, that's how we begin to view people. It's not just me who says this. We get hints of this in James 3:9. He's talking about the tongue, like who can tame the tongue? Nobody. He says it's with it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who have been made in the likeness of God. And so all of humanity, every person, has incredible value, and that is what moves us to do justice. God actually showed that value, right? He shows how valuable people are. Again, for God so loved the world that he gave the most valuable thing he ever could. That whoever would believe in him would not perish but have eternal life. Again, there's that belief element. That's how we become righteous, is by believing. When we're looking at our larger definition of justice, do we understand humanity, every single person, has incredible value? Do we celebrate that and look to declare that in all that we do? All right, so what does it look like practically? And we're going to move so quick through here. Buckle up, hang on. So a few things. One thing, there's three elements we're going to start with. The first one is this, is protection. In Proverbs 22:22 and 23, lots of twos there, right? In Proverbs, there it says, in protection, do not rob the poor because he is poor. Do not crush the needy at the gate, for the Lord will plead their case and will take the life of those who rob them. There's an element of protection that we don't take advantage of people because there's incredible value. But not just protection, there's also an element of provision. As you read here in Deuteronomy 24:19, when you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, meaning a bundle of barley or wheat or whatever it is that's there, if you happen to forget it in the field, don't go back and say, man, that's worth $100. I should have brought that. That's worth whatever. You forgot it, leave it, right? It shall belong to the stranger, the orphan, and to the widow. If we were to continue to tease that out, Leviticus 19:9 tells us that those who have the land, when you're reaping the field, you leave the edges for who? The stranger, the orphan, and the widow, because they have incredible value, not out of pity, because they have incredible value. And that is why we do justice. The last thing here that I want to see about what does it practically look like, it's personal. We can't miss this, right? You think about the story of Ruth, Boaz. If you're not familiar here, Ruth, she was a Moabite widow. So let me translate that. She was a stranger widow, two of the three. She follows Naomi back into Israel. They're both both widows. There they are exposed. And so Ruth is, I'll go find food. I'll go find things for us. We need that. And so she finds her way to Boaz's field. And Boaz comes out and he looks and he's like, oh, there's somebody over there, whatever. No, what did he say? Who? He talks to the servant who is in charge of the reapers. Whose young woman is that? Who is she? Oh, that's Ruth. Huh. Ruth, come here. Come here. So Ruth comes near. He's like, Ruth, here's the deal. Stay with my people. Don't go any other place. Stay here with my people. Follow them as they go. There's going to be protection. You're going to have provision. Stay here. It's costing him to do that. He goes and he talks to the reapers and says, hey, as she's coming behind, you give. You make it easy for her. You see, this is incredible. This isn't some distance, let me throw money at this problem. This is personal interaction that comes through here. Jesus talks about this in Luke chapter 14, 12 through 14. He's at a banquet and he sees everybody clamoring for the places of position, right? And he's just looking and watching this and like, what is going on? And he says this, he says, hey, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, don't invite your friends, your brothers or your relatives, nor wealthy neighbors. Otherwise, they will invite you to a meal in return and you will have your repayment. But when you give a banquet, invite people who are poor, who have disabilities, who are limping, and people who are blind, and you will be blessed since they do not have the means to repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Because Jesus understands each of those people in those categories are fearfully made in the image of God and have incredible value. Invite into your home, incredibly personal. So here we are with all these different elements that we've run through. And you're like, really, we have? Like, it might have been a fire hose. Just bear with me. Here are some of the elements we're going to try to tie together in a very broad definition of justice here. It's going to involve our attitudes. It's going to involve action. It's going to involve people. It's going to involve our possessions because it costs us to do things, right? It's going to also deal with our design and our purpose in life. And it's going to have this element of ruling. So you got all those elements that are coming together with justice. And so this is the Todd Berkey translation of justice or definition of justice. It won't be in any book, any place. It'll just be on the screen for a few seconds. But as I look at justice broadly, it's going to have a lot of different applications. But in its most basic form, justice is this: to view and treat people and possessions as God intended and encourage others to do the same. When we think about what is justice, it's going to apply in a lot of different ways, but in general, when you're looking here, it is the heart, it's how you view, and there's action and treat people and possessions as God intended. You're aligned with his norm, not our own, and you are encouraging others to do the same. You are ruling in your sphere of influence. Things work best here. What that might look like, really, just really quick, what it might look like in your home is not just that we are kind. Hey, here in the Berkey home, we're just kind people. We do kindness. Well, I need to also be instilling my kids, why do we do kindness? Well, because God is kind. But also because every person that we encounter, they are made in the image of God for whom Christ died, and they have incredible value, and they are deserving of kindness. That's why we do kindness. And things work best around here in our household when you are kind. When you are kind with your words, when you are kind with your actions, when you are kind because there's such value with these people, whether it's your brother or whether it's strangers out and about, the way things work in our household is this. Not just be kind and call that good. It's the motive behind it. I'm sitting there, I'm encouraging others to view and see them, others through the lens of the gospel. Justice, to view and treat people and possessions God intended and encourage others to do the same. There's one obstacle, and I will move fast through this. There's only one obstacle here that he tells us in verse 4, haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked is sin. I don't have time to get into this, but I'm just going to let you know this. If you were to look at what is haughty eyes, the idea is I'm better than others. You want to stop justice? Begin to look at everybody else around you and think that you are better. You know, I've worked harder to get where I am, so I'm just a little bit better than you. I've had, you know, just a little stronger, a little smarter. I've worked harder at my education. Begin to look down at people. You want to stop justice. That's one huge obstacle. It's the same thing of 515, Todd, 515. Stop being a jogger. Return to being a runner. In a proud heart. The proud heart simply says, I desire my own glory and my own comfort more than anything else. And it's funny that according to Proverbs here, that what stops justice, it's not about how much money or time is given, but it's all about our view of ourselves. And we've covered a lot. We've covered a ton of ground. We looked at kind of what is justice. It's simply, you know, to rule in step with God. And we all rule in some sphere. Who is impacted? Everybody, but it aims and focuses on the least of these. What does it look like? There's protection, provision. It's incredibly personal. So what do we do with this? How do we apply this? I'm going to move quickly through here, but I just want you just for a moment. We cannot image. If our purpose is to image God, and if justice is to rule in step with God, we can't do that if we don't know him. If we don't know what he is like, we can't image him. We can't rule like him. We can't live in step with him. So we need to get to know him. And so application here, I would really encourage you, get to know God a little bit better. One of the best ways to know who God is hang out in the Gospels and get to know Jesus. And I say that towards the end of Jesus' life, he's sitting there and he's talking to the disciples and he's saying all these incredible, beautiful things. And Philip, his disciple's like, hey, Jesus, can you just show us the Father? Just show us the Father. It'll be enough for us. And Jesus stops in his tracks. He's like, Philip, have I not been with you long enough? Do you not understand that I image him in all that I do? If you've seen me, you have seen the Father. So if you want to get to know the Father, look at the Son. So I would encourage all of us, maybe this week you spend time in John or Luke and just get to know Jesus and his attitude towards the least of these. When he's being threatened to be stoned in the temple and he's leaving the temple and there's a blind person who's viewed as an outcast. And what does he do? He's like, I'm in harm's way, so get me out of here. Or does he stop and heal because there's value? Get to know him and then reflect. And reflect honestly. This is really hard. Most of us, we're so busy, we don't just stop. But I just really reflect. How do you view people? How do you view possessions that are entrusted to you to steward? Do you really look when you're driving and somebody cuts you off or you're like, man, made in the image of God for whom Christ died? Or is it like, no, that person is horrible and begin to write a narrative all over the place? When we're in line at a grocery store or we are waiting in a restaurant, we're so plugged into our phone or do we have our heads up and we're looking around and seeing people? And as we see them, how are we seeing them? Are there obstacles for us, like just to get around, and obstacles we have to overcome to become more and better people, stronger, richer, whatever it may be? How do we view people and possessions? And then the third one is take a step. And what do I mean by taking a step? I mean, there are so many needs. You can't step into all of them, but you can step into one. We're not called to step into all, but we are called to step into one. And maybe that looks like you're going to take Jesus' advice and go ahead and say, I'm going to do a party and I'm inviting all these people in who can't repay me. I'm going to do that. Maybe that's overwhelming. So maybe you just say, one. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take a step with just one. I'm going to look around. Are there any strangers around here? And this is, what a beautiful blessing that we get to be in this town. Do you know what's getting ready to happen? School is getting ready to start in the fall, and we are going to have thousands of international students who are going to arrive, who are strangers, who don't know how this U.S. thing works. They don't know. They're confused. And here they are, and in many ways, they're defenseless. And we have a beautiful opportunity. One of the ways that we try to step in is through the Big Give. It's a wonderful way that we give new furniture, new items to welcome people in. And again, it's not done out of pity. It's like, this is our privilege. You are valuable. You are worthy of the greatest thing ever, that God so loved you that he gave his one and only son. That's why we're here with this, is to build a relationship. And maybe from that act, we go ahead and deliver and we say, why don't you come to our house? And we begin to form these relationships with people like Manas Vinny, who my family had the opportunity to get to know her and to invest in her and her friends, to help them go bicycle shopping so they wouldn't be taken advantage of off of Craigslist, that we got to help them when there was a medical emergency to step into things, and who later, after she left and we helped them move to their next location, who reached out later on and said, here's the deal. I'm going to be back in College Station on this date. Would you baptize me? Because I've come to know the God that you've talked about. We have these beautiful opportunities that are coming this way. Take a step and do more than just an action, like invite people into your lives. Or maybe we live here, there's widows and widowers all over the place. Maybe we just take some time and just sit and listen and just, we're with them. There are orphans, there's foster cares, there's people, foster care system that we might be involved with, those who are fostering. How can we help? How can we get around those folks? Or maybe there's this. I mean, there's a loneliness epidemic that is off the charts. And there are people who are in this room and people who will come into this room who maybe you sit next to all the time who are just dying inside because they think nobody cares. Justice is going, they're part of my sphere of influence. Let me step in and get to know them. Let them know of their value. That was me. I walked through church doors for so long with my church face on, like, hi, I'm so good. And I wasn't. I was miserable and I was lonely and I was just waiting. Would somebody just say hi and get to know me? I give you these examples because justice is huge and we can feel like it's so overwhelming, but we gotta break it down into these small practical steps so that we can do justice. We're given great opportunities. Last thing, and hear me on this. Remember, these are simply invitations to live in step with the Lord. These are not mandates that if you don't do them, God's gonna kick you out of his kingdom because we are covered by grace. These are invitations for us to enjoy the abundance and the beauty of the life that God has given us. When we image him by doing righteousness, by doing justice, we are imaging him living on design. That is beautiful. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for this day you've given us. Thank you. Thank you for the fact that you give us practical steps and ways that we can image you, Lord. I thank you that, you invite us into the beauty of imaging you. And Lord, there's a huge responsibility that comes with that, but it's not ours to have to figure out on our own. Lord, we step into the needs that you see in front of us, Lord. Would you transform the way that we think, the way that we view people and possessions? Would we see them as you see them and encourage others to do the same? We love you. In Jesus' name.